Hey, it's Sean Spicer.
And I'm Katie Pavlich.
The midterm elections are approaching and the anticipation is building with each passing day. President Trump's in full stump mode, traveling the country and campaigning for his fellow Republicans in Congress. It goes without saying, there's a lot on the line when Americans go to the polls on November 6th.
Stay up to date with the latest news and information by subscribing to our new podcast, Everything's Going to Be All Right. It's available now on radio.com, iTunes, or wherever you go to download your podcast.
That's Everything's Going to Be All Right.
Subscribe today and don't miss out.
Rashini Rajkumar with you. We have quite an hour for you. At 10:35, we are expecting a live address from President Trump. So we will carry that live as soon as that comes on later this hour. And right now, what I've been talking about all morning, and people have been sharing some commentary, what about civility in our current climate? Is it possible? Do you want it? Are you proactively trying to be civil, or are you part of the nastiness that we've seen on the rise? To get into some post-election civility, we've asked an expert. He is Professor Bill Dougherty. He's a professor in the University of Minnesota's Department of Family Social Science and a co-founder of Better Angels. Welcome, Professor. Great to have you here.
Good to be with you.
All right. Let's talk about civility. I can't even believe I'm asking you this, but how should we define civility right now?
Well, I think of it as treating the people that we are interacting with respect and dignity, even if we disagree vehemently with their opinions.
Yeah. And why do you think, from the different studies you look at in your research, why is it so hard? And it's not just the last 2 years. It's been growing that people seem to find things wrong with you when you disagree with them or have a different political opinion or just a different opinion. You're now all of a sudden evil instead of, oh, they just disagree or have a different opinion.
Yeah, well, we've gotten to this point where we think of the policies that we disagree with or agree with as the values themselves, okay? So that if you and I disagree about affirmative action, and suppose I'm against it for a number of reasons, then you conclude that I hate minority folks, that I'm against equal opportunity. So part of it is that our policy disagreements have become so strong that they become stand-ins for core human values. So if we differ in policies, we differ in our humanity.
Wow, really well said. Well, what is your advice for helping people to reframe that in their own brains?
Well, for starters, is to separate policies from fundamental values. I think most Americans have similar hopes for the country and its people. We want to raise our children to be well-educated and to be healthy. We want people to have jobs that give them income and give them dignity. I don't know many people disagree with those, but it's tempting to think that the other side have evil motives for the country because I think their policies are going to turn out badly for people. So then what we do is we assign malicious intention to the other side.
Interesting. We assign malicious intention. All right. There are some texts, and phone lines are open, folks, if you have any questions for Professor Bill Dougherty. 651 or 866-989-9226. Or maybe you have some solutions. I'd love to hear from you. This texter points this out. They say, good show. I just want to comment about President Trump. Whether you support him or not, just think about what he could have accomplished if he was able to control his mouth. I really believe he doesn't mean a lot of things he says, but he's not able to control himself and so comes across as a big windbag at times. His leadership would be much stronger if he could control himself.
Well, that's a civil comment, okay? The issue is whether if somebody disagrees with that person, how they treat that person. So what I'm not talking about attitudes towards the president or the leaders of the parties. We're in a democracy, you know, say what you want, right? I'm talking about how if somebody disagrees with that individual, suppose somebody says on the other side, well, that's part of the package. You get a disruptor. You get a gladiator, okay? He's not a politician. He came to that office to disrupt things, and the mouth is part of it. Okay, that would be a counter to what that person said. The key is what happens next. Does the person who tweeted say, basically, you're an idiot for thinking that, okay? Or you must be in his back pocket, right? How do we deal with our differences of opinion?
And one listener texts this in, we have greatly confused the word hate with disagree.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. And everything is a war against. So if I think your policy is going to hurt children, then I say you're on a war against children. Okay. Or if I think your policy is going to hurt business, then I say you want to dismantle business in the United States. So we take it to that level, and then every kind of rational conversation ceases.
Very true. I'm talking with Professor Bill Dougherty. You can too. He is a professor in the Department of Family Social Science. We're talking about post-election civility. There's a word that doesn't get celebrated too much. 651-989-9226. Or 866-989-9226. Earlier in the show, Professor, I complimented both Republican Jeff Johnson and Democrat Tim Walz, who is now the governor-elect, for maintaining what I could see on their own. So I can't speak for the supporters that may have bought ads in their name. But individually, they showed a great deal of respect and civility toward one another. And I think encouraged their supporters to be respectful to the other side. Would you agree with that? Were you watching that at all?
Yes, that's what I concurred as well. And part of it is they did not attack each other's motives.
Interesting. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's what I was saying earlier that if I think your policy, I think that you are going to you're a tax and spend person. Okay, that's the Republican critique of Democrats. Then what if I think what you're about is to get people dependent on government so they'll vote for you, okay? Grow the government, make people dependent so that you can stay in office. It's all about your power, okay? That's attributing a very negative intention to you. Or on the other side, if Walz had said that the Johnson support for Trump and the tax breaks that liberals view as helping the rich, that all you're interested in is enriching your buddies, okay? Your big rich buddies at the expense of poor people in this country. So that's what I mean by the assignment of negative motives and intentions, which basically translates to you and your people are evil. You are enemies.
All right, we do have to take a quick break, but we will entertain your calls for Professor Bill Dougherty, your questions, your comments. Why do you think civility has kind of gone out the window? And I'm looking at the Star Tribune today and the different congressional districts in the race between Angie Craig and Jason Lewis. It was very close in the final numbers. That got very contentious and nasty, as did the election or the race for Minnesota Attorney General. What are your thoughts on that? Give me a ring. 651-989-9226. We will be right back. Rashini Rajkumar back with you. We are talking post-election civility with Professor Bill Dougherty from the University of Minnesota's Family Social Science Department. We had a lot of texts come in while we were at break, and a couple of them I just want to share, and then we'll address some issues in them. One person says, civility went out the window with Gore v. Bush. Another saying, pipe dream, civility, not with a body slam president. And another, does your guest think the president can show civility in the next 2 years? So these are kind of political statements that people are making. Obviously, they've made kind of a partisan statement even in how they're asking this. But you and I were talking off air about truth statements versus I statements. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah. So it's in everyday conversation, and I want to stress that what I'm talking about is civility between regular people. I'm not talking about how you would run against Donald Trump. I mean, that's a whole other issue. I'm talking about how this affects us in our everyday lives. And one of the skills that I think people could develop is the ability to say, this is what I think. This is the conclusion I've come to, as opposed to this is how it is. Okay, some of the tweets and other sorts of things. And this is who this candidate is. Okay, this is who the other side is. This is what they think. As I was listening to your show in the earlier period, it's a lie to say that the pre-existing conditions are going to be taken away. They're lying.
He was pretty adamant about that.
What that does is it polarizes the other side, because the next caller says, well, no, if you look at it this way, Yes, the other folks may be taking that away. So what I recommend is saying, this is how I see this. This is the conclusion I've come to. These are the sources that I have. This is my view on this, as opposed to this is how it is. The earth is round. End of conversation.
Yeah, and you, I always like talking about solutions. I think it gets us farther than just continually rolling in the muck, right? And believe me, I'm a talk show host. I like muck too, but at the same time, we got to turn and get some solutions going. So just after the 2016 presidential election, Professor Doherty, you and some colleagues founded Better Angels. What is Better Angels? Now it's in 30 states.
Yeah, so Better Angels is a nonprofit that's dedicated to depolarizing America. And the term Better Angels came from Abraham Lincoln's first inaugural address, The Better Angels of Our Nature. And we got started after President Trump was elected. We pulled together 10 Hillary voters and 10 Trump voters in Southwest Ohio for 13 hours.
And they got along?
And it was intense and it was good because they came together because they said, we're in a small town. We have to run this town together. We have schools to run. We have roads to build. We have to get past the rancor. And so Better Angels is committed to bringing people together, what we call reds and blues, to understand each other beyond stereotypes and see if they can find common ground. Okay.
That I applaud that effort. And if you want to look into Better Angels, if you want to become a member, very low cost, $10. But just look into it. You've got literature on there also.
Oh, yeah. Big website, better-angels.org. Minnesota is becoming a hub of Better Angels. We have 500 members. We've had 22 workshops so far in Minnesota where we bring together seven reds and seven blues for 3 hours or a full day. And we also have skills workshops for people to learn how to talk across the political divide.
All right. This is the website, better-angels.org. And the bottom line there, it's a solution if you have angst right now, but you still feel like you want to find love for your neighbor or people who disagree. And also you can educate people who don't agree with you. This is a great way to come together and hopefully work through the divide, because millions of us across the country are not the office holders. We've got to live day to day in the world, go to work, go to yoga class, go to the gas station, go to the grocery store. So civility is so needed, Professor.
And it's so hard to do online, by the way. So one of my recommendations is do not do political combat online. There are relationships being severed. There are family ties being severed. This is the worst I've ever seen, and I lived through the 1960s. Okay, a lot of historians say this is the most contentious, polarized time in our country since the 1850s. And we're letting the political leaders and what they're doing, we're letting it hurt our families. We're letting it hurt our friendships. And we don't have to let that happen.
Right. We can take control of our own brains, our own hearts, our own actions, and definitely our own communities.
Yes.
And that's really big. Well, it has been just a pleasure talking with you. He is Professor Bill Doherty from the Department of Family Social Science at the U of M. He's also a co-founder of Better Angels. Go to their website, better-angels.org. And lots of good wishes with your work, Professor, because we definitely need some healing. And I hate to say that because it's kind of become cliche, but it's not even healing about certain political elections and races. It's just in general, we need to get along better.
Yeah, I want to end with a line from somebody from one of our workshops, an African-American guy and a conservative who said at the end of one of our Better Angels workshops, neither side is going to vanquish the other. And so we're going to have to learn how to run this country together.
Right. This is not Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We'll take a quick break and then we'll be back. Rashini Rajkumar back with you. We have more winners coming up on this Winners Wednesday. The new congressman in the 3rd District, Dean Phillips, will join us at 11:35. We are waiting for President Donald Trump at what is supposed to be a 10:35 press conference or address. We're just kind of keeping our ears and eyes open on that. And so far also in Wisconsin, we're waiting for a concession from the current governor, Scott Walker. It looks like he has lost in a close race to Democrat Tony Evers. So lots of things keeping our eyes on. It was, I guess, a pretty interesting, not as crazy or nail-biting, Steve Simpson, of an election night as it could have been, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I guess it obviously depends on if you were one of those who were waiting for those results to come in. You know, you mentioned Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin. We should say that we have heard from him this morning via Twitter.
Oh, really?
Just about an hour or so ago, he posted a Bible verse. Shortly after 9 this morning, he tweeted the psalm, "This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." Walker's father was a Baptist preacher who died back in October. So here's the thing with this. The unofficial results are that Evers defeated him by just over a percentage point, but only candidates who lose by less than a point can request a recount. So it's that razor thin of a margin to be in a position to request a recount. Evers, of course, declared victory last night, or early this morning, I guess, to be more precise. But it doesn't look like, the way the numbers are shaking out now, that Governor Walker is going to have an opportunity to declare a recount. So it looks like that's where this is going to go. But again, he hasn't officially conceded yet. So we'll see, and maybe that'll happen sometime today or maybe not. We'll see.
And we're also waiting on Minnesota's 1st District between Hagedorn and Fian. Also very close. I mean, it gets very nail-biting for those supporters. You know, they've worked really hard. In some cases, a contentious, kind of nasty, actually, 1st District got kind of nasty.
Yeah, for sure. A couple of the districts did. And as you said, some of them, perhaps the margin of error. And that's why I think this is going to be so fascinating, because this is the day, the next couple of days, as you know, Roshini, this is the day when we start to crunch the numbers and we start to look for trends across the country. And where did, you know, the Democrats do well? Where did some of the Republicans do better? And what were the demographic makeups of the districts that they did well in? And what does that bode coming for 2020. So that's right, where a lot of the numbers geeks start crunching numbers here and try to figure that all out.
Right. And it's always interesting. It's always interesting to look at trends, to look at numbers, Steve. And the other piece, you know, we have been hearing various pundits talk about what a big role the new governor will have, because the 2020 census comes up in 2020. And so the current new governor, which is Governor-elect Tim Walz from Minnesota, will be part of redistricting that could happen. And when you hear that term, people get very nervous. And census numbers coming out of 2020 will give us some answers there. So hopefully that is something that does not become politicized, because that is truly a population-focused assessment, which our Constitution lays out, and that is how we determine the different districts and representation for all of the people in the state of Minnesota, and then indeed the entire country.
The term is gerrymandering, and it's something that has been done for many, many decades from both parties, we should mention. But some are more egregious than others. Some of these districts, and we've seen them all across the country. In fact, some states, some parties have gone to court.
Well, I'd like to think redistricting and gerrymandering are not the same. I mean, sometimes redistricting happens because of a pure population change.
No, totally. No,
but
I
then
see
that
what you mean.
Gerrymandering
You're right.
is that's where it becomes political.
That's exactly what I meant.
The
political part comes in where people start drawing these maps to look like some sort of an amoeba.
I love that word.
To go from one side of the state to another. And again, this happens in every state. This isn't just here. I mean, this happens everywhere. And some are just more egregious than others. And as we said, there are some states that have actually gone to court to ask judges to rule them unconstitutional. But, you know, judges are kind of a little leery to get involved in the legislative process. Some are, some aren't.
Right.
But there are some that are just so egregious that they say, yeah, you got to go back and draw these again. You know, that's just
absolutely. Well, and speaking of that, you know, we have our own districts that have flip-flopped or have been very contentious in the 2nd District between Angie Craig and Jason Lewis. There was, you know, the rematch there and so much contention. So you really hope that those constituents, supporters, everyone can calm down and realize they are one district.
Yeah, for sure.
Moving forward.
Yep.
All right, we are waiting for President Donald Trump and his address. We're going to take a quick break, and hopefully when we return, we'll hear that live address. Roshini Rajkumar back with you. We are waiting on what looks like a bit of a delayed press conference that President Donald Trump is scheduled to have, so we will bring that to you live as soon as that comes on. Meantime, love to hear from you, 651-989-9226. We were just talking civility post-election, and we got some inside expert advice from Professor Bill Daugherty. Lots of texts coming in from people, some saying temperaments seem to go from 1 to 100. No personal restraint is used. Yeah, and I mean, that is something that is troubling when you look at the criticism that people just are so from 1 to 100, quick to judge, quick to attack, quick to say you're mean or wrong and use words of hate versus words of understanding. So I really liked Professor Doherty's lines when he said, let's look at truth statements versus I statements. What's actually the truth versus something that I individually believe or want or think? And Dave, that definitely gets lost in the shuffle when it comes to talking politics and even sometimes talking religion.
It absolutely does. And I think it's different also when you talk about speaking to someone in person versus speaking on social media. Because, A, you don't get the inflection that somebody's using when you're just reading something they typed out on Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is. But, B, it's also, let's be honest, a lot easier to hide behind your keyboard and just lob Molotov cocktails out there and rip whoever you want and say whatever you want, be as nasty as you want, when you don't have to answer for it, speaking directly to somebody.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And the bottom line is I'm a huge lover of Twitter. I think it can be used for a lot of good. I'm kind of growing my skills on Instagram. I've been on Facebook since 2010. I mean, social media has such an opportunity, provides such an opportunity for good and sharing and healing. But when people hide behind it, or they want to be anonymous, or they hide behind because they're not looking at you directly in the eye. Mm-hmm. Would you say the same thing if you were looking at someone directly in the eye? That's what I always ask before you press that post button.
Yeah, and certainly most times you'd have to think they absolutely would not say that. But, you know, there's a difference between good-natured ribbing and making a crack about somebody. That's all in good fun. But then again, even on social media, that doesn't always come across. And I don't think people realize as they're typing that, you know, I'm making a little joke here, you know, I'm poking fun, but not seriously. Well, a lot of people might take it seriously and be offended or whatever word you want to use, you know, not take it in the spirit that it was intended because, well, they don't know how it was intended. They didn't actually hear you make the comment. They're only reading it on their screen in passing.
Yeah, and even on the text screen that comes into us here, you know, I always say accuracy matters. And when you have an opinion, if you don't even get certain candidates' names right, correct, or you don't know the issue for which you're talking about, mm-hmm. and you blather off to me on the text screen or you tweet that out there, then you lose some of your credibility, if not all of your credibility, in the ability to criticize the other side or someone who doesn't agree with you.
Yeah, and like you said, accuracy certainly counts. Be nice if the president was accurate with his clock here.
No, yeah, good one. Good one, Dave Harrigan. Well, one thing I think we can all agree on is the heroes, many of them dearly departed, of World War I did a lot for the freedom of our country. And on Sunday, November 11th, which is Veterans Day at 10 a.m., there will be an event to mark the 100 years to recognize them on the 100th anniversary of the World War I armistice. That's happening at Flagpole Plaza at 45th Avenue North and Victory Memorial Drive on Sunday, on Veterans Day.
Oh,
so I wanted to let people know about that. There will be a flag lowering, prominent speakers on the war's local history, musician Robert Robinson, and of course a 21-gun salute, and a moment of silence. So I think it's poignant that this is happening right now because we actually are reminded when we go to the polls every election day, every time, whether it's a presidential year or the midterms, we are continuing the legacy of people like the World War I vets, what they fought for, what they stood for. And that gets lost in the shuffle a lot of the time. And there are currently servicemen and women who are out there fighting for us, protecting our freedoms, and really taking to heart what the Constitution means and what people have long, long, long fought for, died for, continue to espouse. So that's why I wanted to take a moment to mark this anniversary and this commemoration of the anniversary. You know, when I was a TV news reporter, the stories that I was usually able to stay pretty unemotional with who I would interview. I mean, I interviewed a lot of kids. I interviewed survivors of rape, of child abuse, other things. I interviewed people charged with crimes in prison. But the one time I would get a little choked up would be stories about vets, you know, interviewing different former Green Beret mm-hmm. or other heroes, men and women, knowing that what they did, I mean, they go out there, they're fighting for a bunch of us strangers, or at least hopefully they don't all have to fight, but they're representing, they're putting their lives on the line for us, a bunch of strangers.
It's a common bond that, I mean, I was never in the military, so certainly I don't understand it. And a lot of people don't, and frankly, probably can't understand it, exactly what it means not only be in the military, but to have gone off to war, whether it be World War One, II, Vietnam, whatever it is, moving forward all the way to present day.
Yeah, and the families who support them, those families who were left behind. And, I mean, they have to also be in on that attitude of service and that attitude of patriotism to allow or be okay with the fact that their loved one is off fighting for the country or out there just protecting the country.